I'm truly excited today to welcome onto Radio Gorgeous a comedian, an actress, a writer, a broadcaster, and Coronation Street star. After 30-odd years in the business, she's doing her one-woman show at the South Bank over Christmas 2018. The show was a smash sellout hit at this year's Edinburgh Fringe. The show features sketches, monologues, songs, jokes, and maybe even some dancing. She is the gorgeous Maureen Lipman. Hi, Mo. How are you?
Hi. I'm very well, thank you. I'm just fine. Did you say 30 years in the business or 50?
It says 30 on the info on the South Bank.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
It's 50.
Well, maybe they're trying...
to make me look younger.
Exactly,
they do. Forget it. The whole show is about how I am Maureen Lipman 72, because that's what it always says in the papers. And why does it not say Maureen Lipman 68 kilos? I don't know, because it's much more important to know your weight, which fluctuates, than it is to know your years, which doesn't.
Also, years are relevant, aren't they?
Irrelevant. Look, as long as you can walk and breathe and remember your lines... Or even, you don't even have to do that now because they put things in people's ears when they're really old and then they have it coming through.
That's great news for you.
That's great news, yes. Apparently Marlon Brando always did that. We thought it was genius.
And that's why I was mumbling, because he couldn't quite hear it.
Come again. Yeah, yeah. So I started in 1967, so it is exactly 50 years. I keep hoping somebody's going to give me a watch.
Or a carriage clock. I don't know whether they make them anymore.
For the wrist, it's a little heavy.
I think you want solid gold as well.
I'm just, if you have a vocation, as Confucius says, you never need to work again. It's not work, you know. Being in the street is like coming home for me, because my late husband, Jack Rosenthal, wrote episode 13, and he would always tell the story of the first one going out. And you can't imagine how revolutionary that was, Josephine. I mean, people were talking like we talked.
Well, they had Northern accent, it was live, and it was normal people. That was the idea, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Mm. And it was the vernacular of the street, of the working classes. And it just hadn't happened. I mean, if you wanted a working class person, be it in the North or the South, you got an actor, and they did a Cockney accent. That's how it worked, you
and
know.
And it was always really bad.
Touch of the Dick Van Dykes it was. But, so it was revolutionary then. And so... Jack wrote episode 13. I last week recorded episode 9674. So, and I can actually see how seductive it is for an actor to be in a show like this, because, you know, it's a bit like being at school. Actors are children, really. And they say, you know, you've got to be there at 7:10 and you've got to know scenes 8, 9 and 15, and maybe this story's going forward, maybe the story's going backwards, but you have to make your... And you'll have your lunch now, and this is what it'll be, and you'll finish at 6. And
so you don't have to think.
You don't have to think. You just have to be alert and know your character and know your lines. And the people are all sort of squishy and lovely and nice. And
yeah, I was going to say, has it got a northern atmosphere? Because I'm from the north and so are you. We're both Yorkshire women. So has it got that? I mean, I know that's Lancashire, but has it got a friendly vibe?
Oh, it's made me realise that I've been living the life of an expat for 50 years. Not that I'm complaining, because I love London. I love being a Londoner. But when I get back on the train to go to Media City, what an ill-chosen word that is, but, you know, and I get to my little flat on the sixth floor and I'm looking down on... what is virtually looks like Chicago. This is not Manchester itself, but the skyscrapers and the canal and the Canada geese and the light on the water and all the bridges and the cranes. I mean, it's suddenly a very exciting place to be. And of course, it was always for me an exciting place, because in 1969, I went to Manchester to join a small company called The Stables, attached to Granada Television, and met Jack Rosenthal.
And that's how you fell in love,
that's
is it?
That's how we were together there. Mm. And now I can go back all these years later. He's been gone 14 years now, and there's a Jack Rosenthal Street in Manchester.
Oh my God, this is just, you're coming home, totally, because he is from from Manchester.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely, the working class lad from Manchester.
But those are the days, the 60s, when a working class person was a fashionable person. Now it's like, you know, it's gone back to kind of Oxford and Cambridge types, don't you agree?
I think that certainly that period was a very proletariat period for all of us. You know, Albert Finney and Tom Courtney had suddenly smashed the idea of the gentleman actor.
And thank God.
And at drama school, where I was in 65, you still did receive pronunciation.
Which you're doing very well, darling.
Today. But with the, you know, without that kind of German edge to it, of sort of, I have, and I don't, and I won't, which you now is just something that Harry Enfield can send up. Yeah. But they paved the way for people to be able to be themselves and for people to write parts where we could be ourselves. Having said that, I did see a Parkinson interview with me when I was just starting out, and I did look very, very put together with my bobble cut and my turquoise silk dress, three-piece from Browns, which my then au pair later bled on, which was nice. borrowed it and bled on it. Anyway, and I speak... it is unlikely for a person from Hull to be actually an actress. I do actually speak like a twerp.
But then people did speak like that. I mean, if you just see Vox Pops or anything, you know, young ladies would... I mean, that was the way You know, so it's just that accents have changed over the years. We talk in a more relaxed way now, don't we?
Well, also, you would say now that a popular accent is Geordie, because it's unusual. The Northern accent is now a bit passé, if you like. Look, I've come home. I've come full circle. I'm playing a battle axe. It's like I've been fighting this all my life. But I can really see...
Do you think they haven't gone against type then?
Not at all. It's hardly a stretch at all, my children tell me.
About her.
I can really see how you can go into a show like that for 3 weeks and then sort of wake up 38 years later and your kids have gone through school and it's very seductive. My character is...
It's Evelyn Plummer, isn't it?
It's Evelyn, yes.
Evelyn.
And she is... We think she is the grandmother of Tyrone. Now, Tyrone is Alan Halsall. He's been in it since he was knee-high to a grasshopper. And thank God he's a wonderful young pro. And we can really bounce off each other. So I think they're now writing good. And also, you know, my friend Rula Lenska is in it. And
Hoot.
There's no social life. I mean, apparently there's a Christmas party, but I'm here, I'm not there. There's no, everybody goes home to their life. So I've had a few sort of sardine tin nights there. I've joined a gym and I've sort of done the odd yoga class. It's odd because my partner is here in outside London. So I come back and I honestly, I wake up in the night. I don't know whether I'm in my house, the flat in Manchester, his house. Sometimes I walk into the wall.
Exactly, because you've got to go to the loo in the middle of the night, which we all do, and it's like, where the hell am I?
Where am I? Yes, it's Tuesday, it must be Gerrard's Cross. So I like to keep on my toes. Now, the idea of the one-person show came last year when John Mackay and David Johnson asked me if I would like to do. I've done it before.
Okay.
I've done Live and Kidding at the Duchess before.
So this one, what's it called again?
It's called Up For It. And the idea was that, you know, it was because it was Edinburgh. I wasn't really being kind of provocative at my stage of life. And now it's here. I suppose, really, I should call it Down For It. But that's just as bad, isn't it?
Sounds quite lewd.
Yeah, it sounds worse. Yeah. And I thought about it, and I thought, well, what do I want to do? And a lot of women And men too, presumably, although it seems to be predominantly women, like, you know, Joe Lumley and, oh, Parkinson's, Mike Parkinson's doing it, Joan Collins is doing it. Mm. You know, a lot of women out there saying, and then I wrote, and then I met, and then I had Johnny Depp, and then I had this long affair with... Well, I don't
have... They have showbiz anecdotes.
Yeah, I don't have any of that in my show, because it would bore me to talk about my pathetic...
It's really not
going to pull them in. Basically, I wanted to talk about opinions. So, you know, I wanted to...
I know you've got strong ones.
Yes. Well, yes, and I sometimes regret the fact that my mouth is so near to my brain. And it's sometimes, it's, you know, I have to say, you know, yes, I was wrong, but... It's not politics I want to talk about, because what is the point? We know at the moment we are in a quagmire. Yeah, we don't know why we did Brexit. Mm. We only know it's going to bring down the government, and that poor woman is racing from pillar to post, being attacked by mean, pig-eyed little platinum-eaten crop boys, you know.
Their opinions are coming out again, everyone.
Yes, kind of slightly. Oh, I don't know. It's too, the whole thing is a mess.
Yeah. But so your show's about fun, then, is it?
It's an old-fashioned show. I kid
variety,
you not.
Variety, maybe?
It is variety. Mm. I've got Jackie Dankworth and Charlie Wood, her husband, playing and singing. And the
fantastic! Mm, you've got some real jazzers.
Yes.
And they are, is that Cleo's daughter then?
Yes, that's jazz royalty for you. And the reason I've got them is because we've done a lot of literary festivals together with the poet Jeremy Robson. So we and also, now, when John Dankworth was ill, I was in a concert at Milton Keynes at the Stables, the jazz place where they've been for so many years. And he was ill, and he was... Cleo wasn't there for the rehearsals, and then suddenly she appeared with Jackie and Alec, the son, and said, "Well, we lost him." Now, we had a concert to do that night, and we all assumed that it would then be cancelled, and she said he'd want the show to go on.
I don't believe it, you were there.
And I was there, and I felt completely bonded with that family, as we all did. And in fact, when Cleo sang... He was beautiful, you know, the sort of deer hunter. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the house, and she was so strong. And in fact, I wrote about it at the time. It was something that you would never forget. It was a privilege to be part of that kind of courage. Anyway, so Jackie and I go back quite a way, and I just turn it off because Nats is coming out.
So we were slightly interrupted because two of your dogs arrived. Yes. Can you just tell us quickly, because Radio Gorgeous, we do love dogs.
You love dogs. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So we have Diva, who's going to be 13, is 13, and is a Basenji, which is the barkless dog of the Congo. And I saw...
So is she African?
She is an African dog. They were bred, the bark was bred out of them to fight lions. And you'll see, there are no lions in Paddington. And she is a brilliant, brilliant cat. As a dog, she sort of falls slightly short. Mm. She's not needy. Mm. She's sort of rather aloof, which is quite good for me. And she's quite a brilliant animal. And she's so clever that the dog hotel round the corner said, "This is the lady." She said, "This is the cleverest dog I've ever met. We can't have her here." Because she'd eaten a Gucci belt when she was tiny. Anyway, she's lovely but demanding. And, you know, in a kind of always at the vet way. Podengo Inky is a rescue from Spain, where she was discovered in a bunker, a concrete bunker, living in her own excrement with her brother Boris. And Boris now is here, and he's in Dulwich somewhere. Oh, Beckenham. And they get together, and she's just a proper dog. Mom. You know, big wagging tail, pleased to see you.
Yeah, more of a normal.
I remember Diana Rigg famously said to me, because I had to take Diva on tour, and Diana said to me, why don't you get yourself a proper dog? I said, she is a proper dog. I love her. She said, she doesn't love you. I said, oh, well, fine, okay.
Yeah, that is the most, yeah, she is more like a pussycat, definitely.
Yeah.
So we're talking about your one-woman show and why you were developing the idea.
Okay.
And the Dankworths as well. There's a connection with them because they're playing with you, aren't they?
They're singing my kind of music, which is not cool. But
what
they
is
give
your,
it.
Is it jazzy? What is
it's,
it?
It's the selection from the folks who live on the hill. She does the Windmills of Your Mind.
I love
as a
that.
Flamenco.
What?
Yes, she does. They're very interesting take. Mm. On standards, and they're the music I sort of grew up with, and it was kind of even a bit before my time, big band music and classics, Joe Stafford and Lena Horne, and I do a bit of tango in it with
That's you dancing.
That's me dancing. I tell jokes, which is really
that's difficult, isn't it?
Well, not for me.
Apparently timing and punchlines, you know. But I suppose through your comedy acting, you might have learnt that.
No, I mean, I've been telling jokes since I was a nipper. my mother would usually introduce my telling the joke by giving the punchline away, and then I had to tell it. If you've been through that, you could face a working man's club anywhere in the world. But the reason I'm telling jokes is it's quite revolutionary because you can't tell jokes anymore because of political correctness. You can't even clap anymore. According to Manchester University, clapping is too loud for sensitive people. So you really should use the sign language waving, which I think is, anyway, rude to
that
blind
That could look
people.
Like one of those weird Christians with the hands in the air.
probably. I don't know. But it doesn't work for blind people, obviously. So I'm going to have to try and work on that one. We like applause. And I can't tell Irish jokes. Certainly can't tell ethnically, colour jokes. I can just about tell Jewish jokes, but I don't know.
You can because you're Jewish.
You got that.
You own it. You own it, like you are Jewish, so you can. You're allowed to take the mickey out yourself.
Yes, yeah. Except it's not a great time to be doing that. I think you can still tell jokes about animals, blondes, and old people. So a few of those will go in. I'd like to see if I can actually get the audience out whilst telling jokes. That's my plan. And then I do some monologues. A few years ago, I wrote myself 20... Well, not for myself. I wrote 21 monologues for actors to do in a book called I Must Collect Myself. It didn't do very well. But they're out there and they need doing. So I've woven some of the monologues into characters, and I slip those into the evening.
So are they a bit Alan Bennett sort of thing?
I went first.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, in fact, Ruth Draper, then Joyce Grenfell. So yeah. I've done everybody else's, and I thought it'd be nice to do my own. And it's really interesting watching an audience. Right, this is radio, and you are concentrating on hearing this. But you also have to work a bit as a viewer, as a listener, because you have to see us, you have to see me and you don't know that we're in my kitchen dining room and we've just eaten flapjacks, but all of that you get by sort of working it out in your head. And that's what you have to do when somebody does a monologue. And I can feel the moment from the audience when they accept it and they go into my little world. So it's quite exciting. So there's a bit of acting.
Yeah.
And then I'll have a whinge about, friends whose faces have gone sideways with Botox, and about toilets. I've got a lot to say about the modern toilet, which is bewildering, isn't it? Bewildering. How does anything work anymore?
Well,
how
true.
Do you flush? How do you wash? How do you dry? Nightmare. And then I do a bit about Me Too hashtag, because although I believe that this is a good thing for women ultimately to stop the macho of men. I also think it's very debilitating what's happening to men because they don't know what to be anymore.
They can't make a pass. They can't flirt. They can't chat you up. It's people would think you were a creep if you did it.
They don't know what to do. So
I do feel sorry for my son, who's 19, you know.
I feel sorry for him as well, and he's gorgeous.
Yeah, but he doesn't have girlfriends, and I think it's because he doesn't know where to begin.
No, because men always had the rule book, and we've torn it up. But that had to happen, but at the same time...
Can we have something to replace it? Yeah.
You have to separate... Mm. The serial rapist and Ritalin giver from the man who put his hand on someone's knee, because that's what you did in those days, you know. And I do tell a story about somewhat the only person I think has ever propositioned me. I mean, I do say all this hacking and assaulting and abusing and rest of it. I said, nobody's ever tried anything on me. And I say to the audience, why?
Exactly. You know, I mean, and the answer's up.
What's not to like? Anyway.
You know, it could be because you're funny and men are frightened of funny women.
Much
more, because they think you're going to laugh at them.
Yes, that doesn't go down well, does it? No. Anyway, so I tell a little story about that, and then I tell a little Roman Polanski story from the film of The Pianist, because it's quite funny. One day on the set, and I was fond of him.
He's again got a bit of a reputation, but he's an artist. He's a brilliant director.
And I think he's been punished by 60 years of exile. I think probably that's enough when you compare it to other things that have gone on in this business. And also, let's not forget that most of the women in Hollywood were casting directors. And don't tell me that
they didn't
say to Clark Gable, you can have this part if you, plenty of that went on. You know, and why in the wake of Jimmy Savile, because they missed that, do they choose to pinpoint these nice, light entertainment people? I mean, I'm not talking about Rolf Harris. Obviously, that was a serial problem. But, you know, get your hands off Cliff, get your hands off Jimmy Tarbuck. These people... Yeah, they never touch the rock stars.
No.
And why?
And they have groupies throwing themselves at them every night. In fact, I slept with a pop star when I was 15.
Oh, my goodness. Thank goodness nobody in the world knows about that, Joseph. okay. Hello, 999.
My mum cried. That's all she did.
Do you think that the Rolling Stones, etc., do you think that they said, come in the back of the tour bus? How old did you say you were? You know, I mean, for God's sake. And Charlie Chaplin married two 16-year-olds and an 18-year-old. It's not just happened. I just think it's a lot more nuanced than it is either, you know, than it is about calling out people 40 years after the event.
So tell me about, you took this show up to Edinburgh. What was the reaction?
Well, I think, you know, it's a bit like being in London. There's just so much competition. Certainly went down well with the Gay News.
Fabulous.
Best review I've ever had.
Fabulous.
And it was a nice gig. I had a lovely time, actually, which I mean, if ever you want to really frighten yourself, Joe, just do this. I start the show on a stepladder. Now, that's the reason for that. You will be revealed.
That's nuts.
I thought I was going to die of fear before that curtain opened. My heart was banging frighteningly loudly. And I thought, why would I be doing this? I have a comfortable life. I have grandkids. I don't need this. If I could have disappeared, I would have done. But then that sort of thing of actually talking to an audience that you do when you write, you think about how they'll receive it, and actually watching them warm up and watching. In the end, I couldn't wait to get on there. And I thought, we've got a nice little show here that I could take to many places. Yeah.
You see, it's very clever because they call it the fourth wall is the audience. And then as an actress, when you've been in plays and things, you're not allowed to look at them. You know, you're on a film, you're bottling if you look at the camera. You know, all these things, you're sort of in denial. And this is a show where you can communicate with people, and that's what you're saying is the excitement of it.
I do
With the audience.
I have friends who are, my peers in this, and they hate it when people come up to them in the street and everything. I've never had that problem. I actually like talking to people. Sometimes they're as mad as an orange, of course. But I do like, you can put me anywhere, next to anyone, and I'll chat away, and I'll find out all about them, and I'll pick people up in the street.
Is there any audience participation?
Not in the show in Edinburgh, although I've got the odd volunteer.
Okay. Watch out, folks.
But there might be a bit here. There might be a little bit, but it's not.
So who's your director, darling?
My director, darling, is Simon Evans, who is really a bit of a find. He's a magician, and he's a fantastic magician. He does two shows of his own in Edinburgh. Well, I don't know how he does it all. He's young. He did the play The Best Man with Martin Shaw and Jeff Fahey, which I did last year, or was it this year, at the Honeysuckle Weeks and Glynis Barber. And I really thought he was very good, and I asked him if he would help me with this show, and he did, and he's going to help me again to get into the Purcell rooms.
And has he got original ideas? Is that the thing? Or
he's quiet, but he knows when it's right. And that's, as a director, you need someone to just bring out the best in you. Help me make a few decisions about what should stay and what should go, because basically that's what a one-person show is. It's about what you throw out, as all writing is what you throw out. And of course, time's moving so fast now, when I started this, I did a Theresa May impression, because I'd done her in pantomime when I was the
you
Wicked
did a
Queen.
Theresa May impression.
Yeah, when I was the Wicked Queen at Richmond last year or whenever it was, I lost all my powers. I went off stage and with the grey hair and everything, I could do it. I got
Amber
into
knows.
And yeah. Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah.
You haven't got the bags, though.
Yes, I do. That's why I got the cucumbers on every morning. But I lost my powers, and I changed offstage into an asymmetric dress and high-heeled shoes. And offstage, I said, my magic has vanished. My hair has gone grey. I've got leopard skin shoes. I'm Theresa May. And I came on, and the house went up. But now, you see, and I put her in the show a bit, but I don't want to send her up now.
No, she's going through too hard a time.
It's too painful.
It's too sensitive.
And if she didn't want any of this, she's stuck with it.
Yeah.
And because of it, and because nobody could solve what it is, because nobody knew what we were
getting. One could have done the job well.
The idea that Boris could have got in there with his whiff-waff and his
Would have fallen out with everyone immediately.
Everyone. Yeah. And the idea of getting Jeremy Corbyn, of course, is an anathema to me. So I don't know what I'll put in place of that. Mm. Also in Edinburgh, I had Harry Shearer, who I bumped into in The Butchers in Lydgate.
Who's Harry Shearer?
Harry Shearer?
Sorry to be ignorant.
Yeah. Joe? Mm. Do you remember Spinal Tap?
Yes!
Well, he's Derek Smalls.
Oh, my God!
And he's the voice of The Simpsons, Mr. Burns.
Oh, my God!
And Harry and I did a play together, so we've stayed friends, and I bumped into him because he has a house here. I said, what are you doing for the next few weeks? Well, I said, his wife, Judith Owen, is a great singer. She's on tour. And I said, do you want to come up to Edinburgh and play bass for me? Sure. He said, okay. So he did. I had Harry Shearer. I haven't got him this time, but
you're a star attraction. But now you've got the Dankworth. So
no, I had the Dankworth
as
there.
Well.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Topping it.
Yeah, no, they are, because whoever you are, people can have enough of you.
So can you sing yourself?
If the character sings, then I can sing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If obviously I did Oklahoma, didn't I? Before Hugh Jackman was Hugh Jackman. In fact, the other day in the street, Melanie Hill said to me, you're the link. I said, pardon? She said, you're the link. You know Hugh Jackman, don't you? So I said, yeah. She said, he's coming to the O2. He's coming to Manchester to the Something Centre. She said, you have got to fix it so that the Coronation Street cast get to meet him. So I texted.
Bit of pressure on you.
A bit of pressure, Great. Grace under pressure. Or Grace. Anyway, I texted him and I said, I'm a link, I said, Hugh. 50 years in the business and I'm a sodding link because of you. And he's such a dear man. He sent back immediately, yes, of course, here's the address. He says, you'll be there, you know. I could find a flaw in a Chinese carpet, but I couldn't find a flaw in that boy, and I worked with him for a year.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Just to say, you've worked in film, theatre, comedy, writing, now stand-up show sort of thing, sort of like being a cabaret performer, which honestly is what turns you on most out of all of them, or is it just everything?
It's really whatever you're not doing. Yeah. I do love filming because it's easy in a sense.
Compared to other things.
Well, you're not playing to the, something like, actually what's really difficult is sitcom with an audience, because you're playing to an audience at home, you've got a warm-up man, you've got the audience in the studio. Filming is rarefied. It's a bit of a treat, really. I don't do that much of it.
What, because you've got a Winnebago, costumes, people fussing around you?
It's more to do with the fact that you play a very small scene. You do it 13 times. Somewhere in that is going to be a good performance. Whereas, you have to say that every actor should be on stage for for a show that runs for 6 months, because there's the fascination of the fact that it's different every single night. Nobody understands why, but it's different because you're different, the audience is different, and so that makes it always interesting. I love radio. It's my companion in through life, so that's always a pleasure. What haven't I done that I'd like to do? I would like to do, when you watch Killing Eve, you realise that how far television has come.
Yeah, well, television's taking over from movies, really, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. On stage now, most of the shows are from films, which used to be the other way around. And on television, they are making movies. What they're not doing are any plays. Everything that my late husband did, like 250 of them, you can't get a play anymore on television. You can't. And it's the only medium where the story doesn't start and finish at the same day. You go to the theatre, you introduce to a character, and by the end of the evening, when you go to Joe Allen's, you know what happened. But on television, for some reason, everything has to be a series.
Yes, now it's got to be... Well, it's always been six, and now they're, because of America, do like 10 and 12. They're now thinking in England they're going to have to do longer series.
Yeah. Well, it would be nice to
To be in a TV series that's really, really successful.
Yeah. I'm not knocking that as a concept.
Any producers out there, please?
Listening to Radio Gorgeous.
Exactly, I'm sure they are.
I presume they all listen to Radio Gorgeous.
So, up for it's on at the Purcell Rooms on the South Bank in London. Your dates are, I think that was the 17th of December till the 6th of January.
Yep.
And everyone's invited, aren't they?
It's I can't do it without you, that's for sure. It will be very lonely and bleak if you don't come. And I think, given that you've got the cream of musicals and dance and everything, it would be a bit grandiose of me to say come to mine. But then why not be grandiose? Come to mine.
It's going to be really good fun. and I know that you are someone that's totally up for it.
I'm up for it, yeah, sure I am, I think.
Great. Thank you so much, Maureen, for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
It's been my pleasure.
And for more hilarious women, always go to radiogorgeous.com. Thanks for listening.